This is Salt and Spine.
New York was really what changed me of look at all this amazing, different, diverse cuisines and people making food. And that's when I met all these new friends who were like really interested in eating different things with me. And that's what made me feel more comfortable about like, have you ever tried like kimchi stew? Like, can we go to H Mart together? And yeah, like all of my friendship really started from mutual love for food.
Hi there, I'm Brian Hogan Stewart, and you're listening to Salt and Spine, Stories Behind Cookbooks. And we're back with a really exciting conversation today, and it's all about Chili Crisp. That's right, if you've ever wondered about the magic behind that jar of Chili Crisp in your pantry, this episode is for you. We're about to go on a flavor adventure and a deep dive into Chili Crisp with James Park. Now, James is not only a self-described Chili Crisp aficionado, but he's also the author, a first-time cookbook author, of a new book on, you guessed it, Chili Crisp, aptly titled Chili Crisp. So we're going to talk all things Chili Crisp today, learn a little bit about James, who spent the first part of his life in Korea before moving to the United States as an early teenager. And when James set out to write this book, he really saw it as an open canvas, finding ways to incorporate Chili Crisp into all sorts of recipes, everything from Chili Crisp bucatini carbonara to fiery spaghetti and meatballs to kimchi quesadillas with Chili Crisp, to these incredible looking Chili Crisp biscuits topped with a delicious honey butter glaze. All of these recipes are so interesting, and it's also a great conversation about this Chili Crisp moment that I think so many of us have been in here in the United States. So I'm thrilled to share this conversation with you today, and let's head now to Chronicle Books headquarters in San Francisco, where James Park joined us to talk cookbooks. Hi, James. Thank you so much for joining us on
Salt and Spine.
Thank
you so much for having me.
Yes. Welcome to San Francisco.
I'm very happy to be exposed to this wonderful weather. I can't get over how good weather is in like West Coast.
It's pretty nice. It's a little hot for my taste, but I should.
If this is hot, you're going to melt in New York City.
I know. I know. Yeah. I was in Texas recently. I cannot do this.
That's a different heat.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, congratulations on your book, your first
book,
Chili Crisp. We'll get to the book in a second, but we always like to talk just a little bit more about you, your life, your career, for folks who may not be as familiar. So let's start with your childhood. You know, you were born in Korea, spent the first 13 years of your life there before moving to the United States, to Texas. Is that right?
Yes.
Can you talk about your relationship to food growing up?
Like,
were you interested in food? Were you cooking? What sorts of things were you interested in?
Mm-hmm. I was always interested in eating.
Okay.
I think eating definitely brought me pleasure, and I knew that ever since I was a child. And I remember watching all this like a QVC like commercials of like soy marinated crabs.
Okay.
And I was just fascinated by that. And I think watching all those like food TV really made me want to like cook more. So even though my parents were both working and I didn't really have anyone who was like teaching me how to cook, I was basically watching like TV to inspire me to like start cooking and getting lost in the kitchen.
Sure.
So I remember taking those coins out of like a little coin box in my parents' room and like went shopping and made like the grocery on my own.
Okay.
And one of the very first things that I made for myself was like a potato sandwich.
Okay.
So it's basically like a potato salad. So like you mix like a mashed potato with like carrots and like peas and stuff like that, and you smear it in between bread.
I see.
And that,
and mayo?
Mayo. Okay, yeah. I don't know why we just call that a sandwich.
Yeah.
I didn't know that like a sandwich meant just anything that's in between like two bread.
Uh-huh.
But at the time I thought that was the only or the sandwich.
Right.
And I made it, and I wanted to share how delicious this was with my parents. So I was waiting until my mom came home and I was like, look, I made this. And she was like, oh, great job. But also like she saw the mess that I made in the kitchen. So she was like, can you not cook? Because okay. Like she also didn't want to like clean up all the dirty dishes, right, after working home. So yes. I think all of that kind of like really built me for just my continuous fascination about food and cooking.
Yeah. So you also write in the book about this feeling when you were, I think, in high school of like needing to assimilate more into mm-hmm. American culture. You say that you felt like you needed to hide your love for K-pop, yeah. hide your love for Asian food. Can you talk about the impact that had and how you sort of began to embrace those parts of your identity later on?
Yeah. So I grew up in the southern states. The very first state that I lived was Texas, Austin, Texas. Uh-huh. And I graduated middle school from there and I went to Huntsville, Alabama for high school.
Okay.
At the time, I knew that my parents were sacrificing a lot for me to be there and study. So my idea of succeeding in America or making my parents feel like their sacrifice are worth it, sure, was to be a part of the general culture. So it wasn't really an environment where I felt like I could be myself. So even though there were options to kind of talk more about my love for Korean culture, whether that's K-pop or food, I wanted to move away from that and pretend that I like lean cuisine, you know, like, yeah, I mean, you know, those kind of like
it's all pretend.
General American food that yeah. I haven't really tasted before. Right, like I wanted to be like, I like what you guys are eating.
Right.
And I remember after coming from school, I always like ran to the fridge and like opened my kimchi stack and just like ate kimchi straight out of the container.
Yeah.
And it took a long time for me to feel really comfortable celebrating my roots and Korean food. Uh-huh. It didn't happen until I came to New York where I saw so much diversity. Even though I really, really appreciate my time in my southern states, it didn't help me feel like I was able to find other people like me.
Yeah.
And I appreciate all the wonderful Southern culture that I was exposed to, and now it's very dear to me. New York was really what changed me of look at all these amazing, different, diverse cuisines and people making food. And that's when I met all these new friends who were like really interested in eating different things with me. And that's what made me feel more comfortable about like, have you ever tried like kimchi stew? Like, can we go to H Mart together? And yeah. like all of my friendship really started from mutual love for food. And from there, we are just like all of the friendships and even career and everything is like based on my love for food.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And so when did that sort of happen? Did you move to New York for college?
Yeah, I moved to New York for college.
Okay.
And that's when I saw like K-Town for the uh-huh. first time and all this Korean restaurants serving things like Korean blood sausage and yeah. like a braised pig feed, things that I never thought I would even see in America. They were yeah. serving that and just having a taste of that in New York was so special. And I kept getting lost in that world of cuisine and flavors, whether it's Korean or Chinese or Indian, Filipino, like there's New York is so diverse and yeah. whatever culture and cuisine you think of, there are places to go for that. And that adventure and feeling like all these amazing neighborhoods that transport me to out of America, so-called, it just brought this level of enthusiasm and joy that I never felt before.
Yeah.
And that really translated into when I had my own like kitchen as an RA in college.
Sure.
Yeah. That's when I like started like applying that enthusiasm for eating into more practical cooking.
Got it. So you're living in New York, you're exposed to incredible food mm-hmm. scene, and you have the ability to sort of cook on your own, yeah. clean up your own messes mm-hmm. probably. And then when does the sort of food media, food writing come into it? You started a yeah. chapter of Spoon University, mm-hmm. right, which is a campus-based
yeah.
food publication around the country. Mm-hmm. You started your own chapter yes. of that. Is that sort of the first foray into this career you
yeah.
have now?
Yeah. I think at the time, that's when we all just started getting familiar with the term food media.
Right.
That's when we saw all those like viral food videos on BuzzFeed. And Spoon University was kind of my way of trying to get into that kind of world in a business school. So like I went to business school where I couldn't really find a way to bring that kind of a career professionalism into my college. So I started a chapter there and like kind of ran my magazine for like Spoon University and like college students. And that led me to internship at food.com.
Okay.
And that's where I learned about all the specifics about the magic of recipes, editorial, and how internet content gets consumed by people. And like that's when the videos and like social media for food and cooking really exploded.
Sure. Yeah. You were right in the right time.
I felt
right
very place, fortunate. Right time. Yeah. To really find myself in that industry because it was truly an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you're here about the book, Chili Crisp. You say you've always considered yourself sort of an unofficial Chili Crisp spokesperson or ambassador, right? Your shirt, I noticed, Spicy Boy. Yeah. I love it. Are those Swiftie bracelets, too?
Yeah, it says Spicy.
Okay, but they're giving very Swift vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I was like, did you just come from a concert? No, she's not here anymore.
I appreciate them, but I'm not not part of that.
Got it. Okay, so what do they say?
So it says like spicy, and the second one is James spelled in Korean.
Oh, great.
Letter.
Cool.
Yeah. So spicy James.
So you're very much a spicy Chili Crisp ambassador. Yeah. What prompted you to write a book on Chili Crisp?
Yeah. So Chili Crisp is a condiment that is not really found in Korean cuisine. Mm-hmm. And it is mostly a Chinese condiment, but I noticed that it gets topped with all of my favorite food groups like scallion pancake and dumplings. And as I started becoming more friends with like my Chinese friends, like it really came to me later in my life, but it brought me this level of spicy joy that I never felt. And being able to like really put that on anything that you're eating and instantly change the flavor was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It was different from ketchup or mustard or anything like that.
Right.
It really brought the flavors of the dish, but also like added more flavors, and just the possibilities it could do to what I was eating was like amazing. And I wanted to know more. I wanted to try different kinds and just kind of get lost in the world of Chili Crisp.
Yeah, and you certainly did. I think most people probably know what Chili Crisp is because it's really bad. You're sort of tapping into the zeitgeist, and it's very much a mainstream condiment now as compared to 5 or 6 years ago. But the history of Chili Crisp as sort of like a commercial packaged product dates back to like the 80s, right?
Yes.
With this brand, Lao Gan Ma, which that was the first one you tried.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That's what really started this whole Chili Crisp too. Like even in China, she just started making that in her dumpling shop, and then it became a part of this like commercial pantry staple throughout China and now throughout the world. And now it's like the most popular Chili Crisp sold everywhere in the world.
It's wild. I was reading that they produce 1.3 million bottles of just that brand a day.
There are so many different kinds of like Chili Crisp or Chili Crisp adjacent products under Lao Gan Ma. And just for that product to be sold that much, it's insane.
Sure.
Yeah.
So to get to the basics of it, like what makes a great Chili Crisp? And you write about this in the book, right? Some of the standard ingredients. Mm-hmm. What do you sort of look for, what do you think is like the ideal Chili Crisp?
Yes.
I know you developed your own recipe, so that's the one. But
but when I look at new jars of Chili Crisp that I've never seen, the first thing that I see is the oil and crisp ratio.
Okay.
So Lao Gan Ma Chili Crisp is very crisp heavy. You barely see like a layer of oil.
Yeah.
But depending on what brands you see, you can see the clear distinction of oil and crisp. And I personally love crisp a lot, but there are certain Chili Crisp that's oil heavy, but I think that is definitely better for sleeker finishing touch in a way how you will finish dishes with olive oil. And the second thing is the type of ingredients that set apart from the others. A lot of chilaquiles have their own identity in a way, and what sets them apart is what's inside. Mm-hmm. For example, Fly By Jing, which is one of the most popular chilaquiles in America right now, their identity is very Sichuan forward.
Yeah.
So you will see fermented black beans, Sichuan peppers. It has the signature Sichuan taste versus... My other favorite is Kari Kari. It's Filipino chilaquiles, and it has this big chunks of fried garlics and very crispy. It's not super spicy. It just brings other umami flavors in a way that you wouldn't taste from like Lagama or Fly By Jing. So just comparing all of those visually, taste-wise, it's kind of a fun journey that I hope my book encourages to go.
Yeah, I feel like making this book must have been so much fun for you.
So much fun, so much work, yes, so much oil stains everywhere in my kitchen, let's say.
Yeah. Now, the crisp is often chili, right? Mm-hmm. And you write in the book about lots of different types of chilies. Mm-hmm. You can have Szechuan peppercorns, you can use Aleppo for a light or less spicy, sort of fruitier crisp. But also the crisp can be comprised of other things too. You mentioned garlic, fried shallots are another popular one. And it's so interesting to me, the Filipino one, because there's sort of other variations too of chili crisps. I've seen a Moroccan one.
Oh, yeah. Like
there's several that are
Raja Hanoud, like the spices that they're using.
Right,
yeah, very, very cool.
It's really interesting to see that. And you mentioned Fly By Jing too, which you mention in the beginning of the book, their tagline, which I think is really interesting as we're talking about sort of chili crisp becoming of the moment. Their tagline is not traditional but personal.
So
I thought that's the really interesting way to sort of encapsulate chili crisp. It's not a traditional ingredient
and
in most cases.
She's such a pioneer of sharing her passion in chili crisp to American audience, and until she really came out with that product, everyone just knew about Lagama. But I think she really opened up the door and options for other creators and chefs to really make their own version. And I really appreciate her doing all the work so that we now can talk about chili crisp in a way that we're talking about hot sauce and any sort of condiments.
Right. Yeah. Love that. So you developed your own chili crisp recipe, of course, which opens the book. And yours has a Korean influence.
Yeah. And based on that, you know, not traditional, but personal tagline, it made me think about how can I infuse my Korean identity and flavors into the jar of chili crisp. That made me look into the choice of ingredients and the type of flavor notes that I wanted to represent as Korean food. And the first thing was using gochugaru, which is Korean red pepper flake, as the main red pepper, as a main pepper flakes.
Right.
And that instantly just changed like something that I would eat in my home kitchen. And all the other ingredients like scallion oil or garlic and those flavoring just made me feel like this tastes so Korean, but at the same time, it can be applicable for anything else. And it will just uplift the flavors of other dishes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, like how did you decide or how did you sort of tackle the recipe component of this book? You of course have a couple recipes for chili crisp itself and more nut-based one, your sort of variation, and then a bunch of other recipes that employ chili crisp in them. How did you sort of approach that and the recipe development piece of this and figuring out how to apply chili crisp to things like spaghetti and meatballs?
I think it all just started from what are the dishes that I like to cook and eat, and that kind of gave me a foundation to where to start. And all of those can benefit from having a little bit of spicy twist, but it had to do a lot of adjustment of changing the ratio so that it's not only one note of like spiciness. I love spicy food, but I don't like when all I'm tasting is spice, almost like a punishment. So certain dishes feel like not enjoyable because it's like hurting my inside.
I watched a YouTube video of yours from a while ago where you ate very spicy noodles.
And I want my spicy dishes to be flavorful. So I draw inspiration from things that I cook, like spaghetti and meatballs. I really love that. So it's just twisting the idea of like, how can I infuse the flavors and texture of chili crisps? How, at what point would it be introduced? And sure, I've kind of topped all of these dishes with a drizzle of chili crisps at the end, but reverse engineering that and introducing that in the earlier stage, whether that is incorporating with the meat mixture or adding that into tomato sauce. And a lot of my Korean dishes in the cookbook uses like gochujang, which is red pepper paste, and rethinking a little bit of, okay, if this recipe is already spicy from gochugaru and gochujang, can I add my Korean chili crisps in there and like change a little bit of the ratio still to come out Korean?
Sure.
And it was a lot of fun experiment, and also using Chinese chili crisps into Korean dishes and having it taste familiar yet different was like a very, very exciting opportunity as a part of the recipe development as well.
Yeah, and I think that recipe development piece and how you integrate the crisp into the recipes is what makes the book unique, right? Because I think there, so I won't speak for the average consumer, but I think a lot of people buy chili crisp purely as something to drizzle on a finished product. Mm-hmm. And so seeing a book that's called Chili Crisp might prompt the question, like, why do I need this?
Exactly.
Right? It's just something I drizzle on my meal before I eat it. Mm-hmm. So that approach of really integrating in. And another example of that that I really loved is the biscuits. Speaking about your Southern, right? But you incorporate chili crisp into the biscuits, which you, of course, serve with a honey butter glaze. Looks amazing.
Yeah, which also has a little bit of chili crisp.
Yes, right. Integrate it everywhere you can. Yeah.
And depending on how much and what part of recipe you incorporate chili crisp, it has a very different potent flavor. So you mixing that with as a part of biscuit batter, for example, is different from mixing that with honey butter mixture. And you are thinking that you're just going to get one layer of chili crisp flavors, but by introducing that into different stages of cooking, it has multiple different dimensions of flavors, which is so magical.
It sort of mellows in the batter.
Mellows and like also complements with the other flavor and ingredients. And that's why like I still finish everything with a little bit of chili crisp at the end, because that is a, you know, like think about like garlic, depending on at what stage of you use garlic, whether it's freshly zested or like at the end, or garlic infused oil, garlic powder, they all have a different intensity of garlic flavor. It's the same thing as chili crisp.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. As you were building these recipes, was there anything that was like shocking to you, any combination? Because the chili crisp has a reputation if it can go on anything and everything, right? Mm-hmm. Was there anything that surprised you, or anything that you were like, no, absolutely no, this does not work?
I think one of the biggest surprise pairings was a chili crisp with strawberry jam.
Oh, okay.
So that is a part of the component of my chocolate roll cake that I include in the dessert chapter.
Okay.
This is given you that it's paired with my dessert chili crisp, which is very nutty chili crisp,
right?
To kind of draw back a little bit, that's the chili crisp that I developed to specifically be paired with desserts, because I still wanted the texture and flavors of chili crisp, like spicy, oily, and all of the goodness, but didn't want to taste garlic or scallion in my ice cream.
Yes.
And that really allowed me to have fun with the nature of chili crisp without over competing with the sweetness and the integrity of desserts.
Yeah.
And using that and mixing with strawberry jam, it was like an amazing spicy, sweet, jammy flavor combination that I just like smeared that on top of my ricotta toast, mixed that with like Greek yogurt, and especially the very nutty one had like the nutty texture.
Yeah.
It went so well with strawberry jam, and it made me think of like, should I mix this with apricot jam or like applesauce, and just like a whole new door of like other sweet and spicy like flavors, and yeah. I'm excited to explore even more. Now I'm thinking it would be really good with like fig jam.
Oh, sure.
It's like in season now. Yeah.
Anything spicy with fruit, I think, is a winner for me.
So good. Absolutely.
We'll put you to the test in a minute. So yes. we'll see if that holds true. But yeah, the dessert chapter I think was really interesting because you mentioned you developed this separate chili crisp that avoids the garlic, avoids the things you don't want there. The tahini swirl brownies, I just have so to note too, like I haven't made them yet, but they look incredible.
Yeah, it really provides that wonderful cushion of a flavors. So brownies are very chocolatey, velvety, but it also has a little bit of chili crisp in it. So like, you know, the spicy chocolate is a common concept that I hope you've tried before, but it is such an instant way to add more flavors using box brownies. I personally never make brownies from scratch. Right. I think box brownies are perfectly amazing.
Yes, they're engineered to be so.
Yeah, and like cream cheese and tahini, like they all just work so well together. That creaminess and the nuttiness of tahini also complements like the nut flavor of very nutty crisp as well. So it's just such a trifecta of a dessert that I hope if we're gonna make anything from the dessert chapter, I hope that's the one.
Yeah, it looks so good. I love too that you at the beginning of the book offer just some simple ideas, right? Because somebody makes your recipe for chili crisp, has it on their counter, but doesn't feel like cooking tonight. Like you suggest just some jammy eggs. You suggest like putting it on a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
My favorite is you say one of your simplest pleasures is just potato chips with chili crisp.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'm imagining this bite of, you know, potato chips, a little bit of caviar.
Oh, yes.
Chives.
Here we go.
And a dollop of chili crisp. Uh-huh. That's the
a
party.
A touch of creme fraiche just to like, brighten
that
it.
That sounds so good.
Delicious. Okay, well, we're a show on cookbooks, so we always like to talk a little bit too about cookbooks and your relationship to cookbooks. Did you like when you were moved to New York, started to cook more? Did you seek out cookbooks? Do you remember some of the early ones that you looked to?
Yeah, a lot of my cooking is definitely taught by like cookbook authors, especially cookbooks like Meng Qing's Korean Cookbook. She has two amazing cookbooks about Korean cuisine. And because my mom never really taught me how to cook Korean food, I learned everything that I know about Korean food from her cookbook.
Sure.
And her cooking video persona. And it just inspired me to be who I am right now.
Yeah. And have you met her?
Yes, I have met her, and I told her how she was like my
unofficial Korean
mom, and I just confessed my love for her, and I'm sure she has so many of those fans, and it was truly an honor that I got to like be in the same room with her.
Yeah,
and if she's like my Korean mom, Ina Garten is like my American mom,
sure.
who taught me all things about American culture, entertaining, roast chicken, brie cheese, how to make charcuterie board, like all the amazing thing that she does. I learned that from her, and also always learning to like decorate your table with flowers and all the table arrangement. Just aspirational life things.
Right.
She showed me that.
Two amazing cookbook idols to have.
Yeah.
What do you look for in a good cookbook? Like you're at a bookstore, you're picking some up. What are the things that make it stand out to
you? Yeah. The first thing is just the visuals. If I'm looking through the recipes, I want that recipes to be like, oh, I want to eat that right now.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing that really catches my attention. But what makes me stay about or obsess over the book is the stories. I love seeing pictures of the authors, and I love seeing why these recipes are important and exciting for them. And even though I did write all the head notes, and I love reading them, I didn't realize how hard it was to write all the head notes.
Sure.
In a way, at a certain point, I shared this sentiment with my other friends who have also published their cookbooks. They're like, I don't know, this is just good. How many different ways can I say that it's delicious? Yeah. And like, not every dish kind of has this like a personal meaning behind it. And some dishes, you just like it because it's delicious.
Right.
And I love like just like reading the relationship from the authors of like why they developed this dish and paired with like stunning photos of the recipes.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a salt for me.
Yeah, I love it. Well, we always end with a little game. So we're going to play a game I'm terrible at coming up with fun names. Yeah. So we're just gonna call Chili Crisp it.
Can we Chili Crisp it? There you go.
There's four decks of cards in front of you here. There's vegetables, flavors, which are like herbs and spices, mm-hmm. proteins, and then secret ingredients, which are just a random mix of things. So I thought we would play it chopped style. You can draw one from each of the four.
Yes,
of course we have to add in Chili Crisp. Tell us what you might make with that. How does that sound?
That sounds so fun.
Okay, feel free to draw from the top or the middle, but take one of each and let's see what we're working with.
I'll do a middle section for the vegetable.
Okay.
And this is such a fun game. Actually, there should be a show about this.
Yeah, it's a card. It's actually like a board game that I just repurposed for this use, but you sort of play it like chopped. My friends never play with me because I win.
So do they like do you actually have to cook, or these are just ideas?
No, it's just conceptual. Oh, okay. Yeah, so
let's reveal.
Okay, let's see what we're working with.
The vegetable is beets.
Okay.
And flavor is paprika.
Okay.
Protein is tuna. And secret ingredient is sumac. Ooh. I already know what to make this.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Chili Crisp, of course.
So I would make Chili Crisp with paprika and sumac in it. Sumac has a wonderful, like, zesty, like, brightness. And paprika also has, the smokiness. So adding these two spices as a part of Chili Crisp will create a wonderful, like, color and the flavors. And I would roast beets and first and make it like chill, so that it's kind of, I don't like the hot beets, I always like the cold beets, and like dressed up with like the Chili Crisp vinaigrette arugula and everything, and have like the fresh side on the, you know, in the entree plate,
right?
And for the tuna, I would extract the flavors of Chili Crisp. So I will make like Chili Crisp flavor oil.
Okay.
So I will like mix that with like a little bit of lemon zest. And I will cover that tuna with a little bit of like panko. Smear that Chili Crisp lemony oil on top and sprinkle panko and like quickly sear it.
Sure.
And then like you slice it and like dollop of another Chili Crisp on top.
Of course. That sounds delicious. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
I feel like you got an easy one. Let's do it once more.
This is pretty easy.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can
challenge you.
Yeah. I haven't been challenged yet about how I cannot Chili Crisp yet, so hopefully there's a throw me out of the element moment here.
The card everybody's always afraid to get is gummy bears, but I feel like
gummy bear might be great. I hope I get gummy bear.
We'll see.
I want to get some wild things, like, I don't know, butternut squash. That's not wild.
I feel like that's a great Chili Crisp.
Yeah, it definitely needs a drizzle of Chili Crisp. Okay, the second round. First of all, it's green beans.
Mm-hmm.
And flavor is mustard.
Okay.
Protein is ground beef.
Okay.
And secret ingredient is gochujang.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, this is meant to be mine.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would... You know, mustard is one of those like a hidden condiment that I didn't realize it makes such a big impact.
Yeah.
Like that tangy, like hit your nose kind of a sharpness really cuts through the richness of anything.
Sure.
So I'm really excited that like mustard is here. So I would season the ground beef with a little bit of mustard, like salt, pepper, garlic powder. And then I would... Ooh, this is like my wild idea.
Okay.
I would use green beans as like little stick. So like I will have like a bunch of green beans.
Yeah.
And I would put the seasoned ground beef around it so that it's like one giant, like a drumstick looking.
Okay.
And then I will have a gochujang Chili Crisp glaze on top of the ground meat. So it's kind of like, you're holding that green beans, but you're also eating this like spicy glaze meatloaf-like meat, and you're just kind of slicing it. And as it gets big, all the juice and flavors of ground beef gets soaked into the green beans because the ground beef holds into that.
Right.
Yeah, and it's fun as a visual, and like it also works flavor-wise.
So a green bean stuffed chili crisp meatloaf.
Yeah.
I love it.
In the shape of a drumstick.
In the shape of a drumstick. Yeah. Yeah. Could you make a chili crisp with ground beef in it? Could you make like, could you like crisp it real nice, like almost dehydrate it a little bit, air fry it, and yeah, kind of make a meaty chili crisp?
So I would almost like use the fatty blend of ground beef and just extract all those like a beef fat and mix that with like canola oil and infuse flavors into the oil already, but I would really, really crisp up the ground beef and add that as a part of the add-ons. So mix that with like fried shallots and what else would be good? Like mix that with like scallions and all the things and just kind of go for like beef chili flavor. I mean, beef chili crisp.
Right.
And that would be so good in so many things. Now I really want to make that.
Yeah. Okay. Yum. Well, this was so much
fun. Thanks for the idea. Now I'm going to like have to like go home and like make this ground beefy chili crisp.
Yeah. Book number two.
Yeah.
Meat-based chili crisps.
Ooh. All the potentials, Liam.
Yeah. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you for playing the game, and thank you so much for joining us, James.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can find bonus content from today's show and all of our episodes on our website, saltandspine.com. If you like hearing from your favorite authors on Salt and Spine, and I hope you do, please click subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. We also love to see your ratings on Apple Podcasts. Our show today was produced by me, Brian Hogan Stewart, and our producer, Cleo Worster. Our kitchen correspondent is Sarah Varney, and the Salt and Spine original theme song was created by Brunch for Lunch. Salt and Spine is typically recorded at the Civic Kitchen in San Francisco's Mission District. The Civic Kitchen offers digital and in-person classes for home cooks, and you can find out more at civickitchensf.com. Thanks, as always, to Jen Nurse, Chris Bonomo, and the Civic Kitchen team, and to our friend Celia Sack at Omnivore Books. We'll be back next week with more stories behind the cookbooks you love.